And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. You're very welcome along to the program. 3 minutes past nine, Tuesday, the 29th of April, 2025. Tomorrow, the last day of the month, and then we're into May. We've got summer weather, seemingly today. High temperatures and sunshine. And it's going to stay relatively settled through the bank holiday weekend, though I suspect we might get slightly less good weather as our friends down the country, but you will see. 086 60 25,000, that's the WhatsApp and text number. The lines are wide open for you right now. You can give us a call if you want to, 07491 25,000. We have a myriad of stuff to discuss this morning. Also, just after 10 o'clock, of course, the latest episode of Community to Garda Information, where you hear the latest appeals and information from Garda Síochána first here on the 9 till noon show. That and so much besides, more besides. And we want your emails as well, comments at highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch along, if you're at home, feel free to hop on your smart TV or your Fire Stick. We're on the YouTube app. Just type in Highland Radio Ireland. You'll see we're live. Or on our Facebook pages, Highland Hub, Highland Radio News, Sport and Obituary Notices. And that second Facebook page is your one-stop shop for all the information that you might want on your social media. You get the very latest news, the very latest sport, and of course now the obituary notices are delivered into your feed on that Facebook page as well. Highland Radio News, Sport and Obituary. So give that a follow. And actually, if you are a regular accessor to all of our social media, it's great if you could give us a like or a share, or in fact subscribe. And what subscription means in the YouTube content context, it just means that you're notified when this new video is posted or when we go live. Right, let's look at the papers this morning. I wonder what you all think of this. Perpetrators of domestic abuse could be named under new family law proposals. So this feels like it makes sense. Domestic abuse survivors would be given the chance to waive their anonymity and name their abusers in family law cases under a shake-up of the privacy rules. A study of the in-camera rule, which means certain family law hearings are held in strict privacy, has made more than 20 recommendations designed to make the difficult and sometimes traumatising court case more transparent. The report, which is understood to be the first of its kind, has been welcomed by Justice Minister Jim O'Callaghan. Mr. O'Callaghan said that his view of the controversial in-camera rule was that I have to do something about it in the tenure of my office. He said an important principle of justice was that it was administered in public so that the public could have confidence in the system. When something goes into the dark and it's hidden, that's potentially where difficulties can arise, Mr. O'Callaghan said. New research recommended a new distinction between public and private information where people sharing their experience of the family law court with a trusted family member or relevant party would not be classed as a breach of the in-camera rule. So is that something that maybe it's unfortunately been an experience in your life? Maybe you were the victim of domestic abuse. Would you have liked the opportunity to waive your anonymity so that the person responsible was named? Let us know if you want to. I know it's a very sensitive matter, but perhaps someone out there might want to talk about it. I wanted last Friday we brought the conversation about religion in schools and Catholicism or whatever religion it might be, because I suspected it's one that's going to become more and more relevant. You can always tell in the background when there moves are afoot, right? And I'm not a big fan of things being discussed behind closed doors or kite flying. And I think it's best to talk about things. So that's why those issues were on the agenda last Friday. And I read this morning in the Irish Daily Mail that government TDs have pushed back on plans touted by Helen McEntee to create more multi-denominational schools. Multiple backbenchers across Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael are wary of overreach and have questioned the need for what the Education Minister said will be greater choice for parents. One Fine Gael ministerial source said they were surprised to see Ms. McEntee bring forward the measure after facing sharp criticism for prioritising woke practices such as the failed hate speech legislation as Justice Minister. I've no doubt she feels school patronage is an important issue, but maybe she's still learning into that skid, one minister said. Not really leaning into that skid. I'm not really quite sure what that means. Almost 90% of primary schools in Ireland have a Catholic ethos. However, data from the Department of Education shows that, and I'll change turn to page six, shows that a number of pupils being enrolled in Catholic schools is in decline since 2018, while enrollments in multi-denominational schools continued to rise steadily. Further research has found that the majority of teachers are in favour of separating the church and schools. A survey of members of the INTO found that just 4% of teachers feel preparing students for sacrament should be the responsibility of primary schools, whilst the majority, 46%, were also against teaching religion. Now, a lot of teachers have been keen for me to point out that this was a survey of a relatively small number of teachers, and they have argued to me, often on air, that that's not necessarily reflective of what all teachers feel. Responding to the survey last week, the Education Minister announced that she would bring forward plans to create more multi-denominational schools. But if they don't replace the existing schools, it does give parents more choice, I suppose. On to the Irish Times now, and the Taoiseach has called on Belfast rap group Kneecap to urgently clarify alleged comments attributed to band members about support for Hamas and Hezbollah and the killing of Conservative MPs. Micheál Martin commented after a video emerged of the group at November 23 gig, appearing to show one member saying, "The only good Tory is a dead Tory, kill your local MP." Police in the UK are examining the footage along with a video clip from another concert in November 2024, in which a member of the band appeared to shout, "Up Hamas, up Hezbollah." Both groups are banned as terrorist organisations in the UK, and it's a crime to express support for them. Now, we've kind of got a measure of how far Kneecap are prepared to go, because they released a statement since this was published, and they say they don't support Hamas and they don't support Hezbollah, and they don't condone the murdering of MPs, and they apologise to the families of two MPs, the families of two MPs that were killed. So they've rolled back. Reading the statement, they say their comments were taken out of context. I don't know how you can take those comments out of context, but in any case, we found out how far they're prepared to go in defending their speech, and they've pretty much rolled back and said they didn't mean what they had said. So that's a Kneecap for you. I'm sure many of you are following the death of Virginia Guffrey. It's a bizarre one, because she's another person that has made strong accusations against famous people or royal families that has died either in an accident or a suicide. And in her case, it was a suicide. And you might remember the pictures of her in papers or on the news or on your social media where she had been in a she'd been hit by a bus or something along those lines. And as she was recovering then, she is found to have died by suicide, even though she'd had released a video saying that she wasn't suicidal. And if she was found to have died by suicide, that something else was afoot. But her lawyers now are saying there are big questions over Virginia's death. As I say, she's just the latest in a series of accusers that have died suddenly. The lawyer for Prince Andrew's sex abuse accuser, Virginia Guffrey, yesterday insisted big question marks remain over her death. Carrie Ludden told The Sun that Miss Guffrey, found unresponsive at a remote farmhouse on Friday, had showed no signs of wanting to end her life. Police spent 12 hours collecting evidence at the scene before arranging for her body to be moved, while her family said she died after the toll of abuse became unbearable. But speaking at the house in Perth in Western Australia, Miss London said the US-born mum of three had been planning for the future. She added, "We've got big question marks over it. There's suicide, then there's misadventure. Has she just taken too many painkillers? I don't even know what the cause of death was. The family said what the family has said, but I'm not going to speculate whether it was suicide or accidental," which she's actually is speculating, but I understand where she was coming from in those comments. The Irish Daily Star today reports on the ongoing GRA conference. The leading Garda union has slammed Commissioner Drew Harris's legacy as the force just months before he steps down. Garda Representative Association General Secretary Ronan Schleven said last night, "I suppose you could say that he's left a legacy of fear and mistrust in relation to our members." Mr. Schleven was speaking at the opening of the 11,200 strong organisation's annual conference being held in Killarney. The event also heard calls for trainee Gardaí to have their pay almost doubled. Mr. Schleven made his comments as Mr. Harris, who has been at the helm since September 2018, prepares to retire. He had been due to go in June, but the government has asked him to stay on until September so it can find a replacement. And finally, to international affairs, the Irish Daily Mirror reports that Russian President Vladimir Putin has called a temporary ceasefire in Ukraine, but it's not until next month. This is North Korea confirmed for the first time it has sent troops to the front. Echoing the Kremlin lies, Kim Jong-un military said the troops had been sent to annihilate and wipe out the Ukrainian neo-Nazi occupiers and liberate the Kursk area. The false claim that Ukraine is run by Nazis has been used by Putin to justify the full-scale invasion of the country in February 2022. But President Trump marks 100 days in office today, and he'd be very keen to get a resolution to that situation. And they are hoping that this suggestion of a three-day ceasefire, it's really effectively for Russia to mark the 80th anniversary of the defeat of the Nazis. They're hoping that this opens the door to perhaps a longer ceasefire and negotiations. But we shall see. We shall see. 086 60 25,000, that's your WhatsApp and text number to get in touch with the show. Richard Ryder is of the Disabled Drivers Association of Ireland, and he is their communications and marketing manager. Richard, good morning to you. Thanks so much for joining us.
Morning,
great to have
Greg.
You on the show.
Thanks for having me on again.
You've launched a new awareness campaign aimed at tackling what's described as the ongoing misuse of accessible parking bays. So we have seen, haven't we, an increase in fines and a lot of extra public awareness about this, but the message simply is, seemingly, obviously, isn't getting through to the right level.
It's not getting through. And look, this is not the first time I've been on with you to discuss this, and thanks again for highlighting the issue. I suppose accessible parking bays are a necessity, not a luxury, for people who need to use them, and misuse deprives people with disabilities of their independence. A lot of our members would tell us that, for example, you know, if they can't get into town, that you know, and if they get into town and all the spaces are used up, then that's a big problem for them, and some of them have to go home. And the ability to be able to drive is powerful and positive for them. It empowers them to work, socialise and manage many of their daily tasks. So people should realise this, should never, ever, ever abuse or misuse accessible parking bays. Not for a minute, not for 30 seconds. No excuse is good enough, in our opinion, and it should never happen.
And I think 99 times out of 100, really, they are being taken up just for the convenience of able-bodied people.
100%. So you know what we've all have seen, I'm sure your listeners will as well, when they're in town, you'd see people just pulling into an accessible parking bay, jumping out and running into the bank or the shop. And, you know, and the excuse would be, I'll only be a minute, and that's what I was saying there, or I'll only be 30 seconds. Sure, there's lots of spaces. You know, there's no one using them at the moment. It's that time when they're not being used and that person comes into town to use them, that's when they're needed. And, you know, we're calling for, I suppose, more enforcement and more schemes like text alert scheme that we're kind of launching, you know, we spoke about before. It's now active in Goree and Luke in Dublin. And
how has that worked? Because last time we spoke to you, it was about who do you send the text to again? How does that work?
Yeah, sure. Okay, well, it's basically, it's a very simple, there's no apps involved or anything like that. Basically, each bay is numbered. So say there's 10 bays in the town, 1 to 10. Okay, so you see somebody coming along, you're walking up Main Street, you see somebody just pulling into a space. That bay, say it's bay number 3, for example, will have a mobile phone number on it. And that mobile phone number then connects to the bay attendant, the local warden, who then can come along. So you're not texting the number of the car, you're not taking a photograph of the car, you're texting bay 3, to the number on the sign, which then alerts the warden to come along and just check out the situation to see if it indeed is being abused, you know, and then they can offer the ticket then.
And so, how has that worked out? Because it is open for use and misuse as well.
It's worked out very, very well, I must say. And I know Kilkenny City, Kilkenny and Galway City are now putting the motion forward for it. It is a slow process. Dundalk are also looking at it. You're saying something to abuse. It's a deterrent of nothing else.
Well, that's what it is, really. I mean, the whole idea, presumably, it's not to get a load of people nabbed. It's really to raise awareness to the point where people think twice about it, you know, and go, right, okay, I don't really fancy a fine. Because at the moment, they obviously feel they're immune to it. We'll see then if that is rolled out. Is signage clear enough. I know you can't really speak for every town and village across the entire country, but one thing I have noticed is sometimes, you know, I did accidentally park in a disabled bay once, not an awful long time ago. I genuinely didn't see it was so faded, the picture on the ground. I simply didn't see it. I didn't see it in my reversing camera. Yeah, that's no excuse, because I probably should have triple checked, but I do believe in honesty, right? Is there enough clear signage across the country?
I agree. Totally agree with you. And we have done some audits of towns in Ireland whereby we'll go into the town and do a walk around and check just what you said there, that the signage, that the paint hasn't worn off, or that the sign hasn't been turned around or something like that. Because what's been happening is, believe it or not, in some towns, only 50% of fines are being paid, because what's happening is, you know, a clever barrister or someone doing their job will turn around and say, well, look, my client didn't see the sign and it was faded, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, that's something we're doing. We've done it in Loughrea and Galway and a couple of Ballinasloe as well. And it's something that, I suppose, but look, at the end of the day, we need resources to do that. That costs money to send people to do it. But I think it's a really good point that you bring up, and it's something that needs to be looked at.
And I presume it's the role of the local authority. I mean, I presume, say, for instance, the on-ground marking is very susceptible to street cleaners, for an example.
The high-powered washers, exactly.
So
they need to be done once a year, or whatever.
Or an alternative. You know. I like the vertical signs where possible, but that maybe could create access issues as well.
Yes.
So we had, like, a lot of people give out about parking wardens, right? They give out about them. They're everywhere. You can't park for 2 seconds, but next thing you've got a ticket, right? So why is that not having a noticeable impact, I wonder, on parking in disabled bays in towns where there are parking attendants, like, you know, that people
should
aren't
be. Yeah,
especially considering the fines have increased.
And look, you do need, the fines have increased, and you do need wardens. Without them, can you imagine there was no wardens or no parking? I remember back in the day, 30, 40 years ago, you were able to leave your car in Temple Bar in Dublin for the weekend and head off and have your weekend, you know? But, I mean, now, you know, just be chaos now. You know, it would just be absolute chaos. So we do need people, you know, there needs to be enforcement. There needs to be more enforcement at times, and the guards need to be checking permits as well, because that's another issue, is people, you know, fraudulently using the card. Your listeners might be aware that if they do have a permit, a blue badge, whatever they want to call it, the person who it's registered must be in the vehicle when it's being used. So you can't just take mum or dad's card to pop down into town to do their shopping for them. The mum or dad or whoever it is, loved one, must be in the car with them. That's just something to highlight, you know?
Yeah, and we're all talking about sort of enforcement and awareness and what have you. But really, it's about us considering why these spaces are there. And I think you sort of referenced this already, but it is to allow someone with a disability or restricted movement or whatever it is to be able to partake in society with dignity, with respect, without having to struggle to try and unload a wheelchair, or without having to circle a town 10 times and then go home and not bother being involved in day-to-day life. You know, I mean, that's the moral element of this, that it would be great if we didn't require enforcement and talking about all this stuff. It's just to consider your fellow citizens.
Citizens, I think you made a good point earlier, Greg, is to think twice. Just think about it. Think if it was your loved one, or if it was you that needed one of these cards in the future, what would you think if somebody, as you say, pulled in and used this space when you've made an effort to come into town? And it's not like you or I or anyone else could just hop in the car and rush into town and park wherever. These spaces are intentionally located near amenities like shops and banks, and they are sized specifically to allow people with disabilities safely exit their vehicles, as you just said, because they might have a mobility aid such as a wheelchair. So you should never, ever, ever, and people need to remember that, ever park in a wheelchair accessible parking bay.
Yep, and the fine for parking in a disabled bay without a permit is €150. That goes up to €300 if not paid within 28 days. I'm not sure at this point if even doubling that would make any difference, because you know, there obviously is a sense that they can be wiggled out of, or you know, that you're not going to.
Why not make it €500 and that might
At the end of the day, it's just about respecting your fellow person. Thanks so much indeed, 100%, Richard. Take care.
Thanks again for having me.
Bye bye. Richard Ryder of the Disabled Drivers Association of Ireland. Right. By the way, you've heard the ads not only here on Highland Radio, but they're across the country and in every newspaper as well, because the Tina Turner musical is coming to Ireland, and there's a huge demand on tickets. Now, one of the reasons why I'd be quite selective in going to a concert in Dublin or Belfast is because I find the hassle sometimes not worth the experience, you know. So you get in the car, you drive down, you've the expense of that. Booking a hotel that's not ripping you off completely, finding somewhere to park the car, how do you get from the hotel to the concert, all that kind of stuff. And sometimes with the layers of that, you go, you know what, is it worth it? Well, if you're of that mind, but you love Tina Turner and you want to see the Tina Turner musical, which is all about her great music, but also about her life, and she had some amazing highs, but she had some incredible lows. Tina Turner had to overcome so much to be the woman that she is, and the superstar that she became. But anyway, this is a West End mega hit, and it's coming to the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre Dublin, and it's the first time it's ever been in Ireland, would you believe? And we have a sort of like a Highland Radio package going, but we don't have many seats left. There's only 3 seats. But as part of this trip away, you get overnight accommodation, which includes bed and breakfast at the 4-star City North Hotel. You have luxury coach travel, so it's from wherever you picked up, down and back. Tickets for the show, and we've got great tickets for you as well. But we only have 3 seats left, so I just wanted to give it a mention in case you're of a mind to head down in June. And the good thing about it is it is in June. Sometimes you book something and it feels like it's miles and miles away, but maybe someone close to you has a birthday, or maybe 3 girls or 3 guys or whatever the mix might be want to go down and have a great night out listening to amazing music. Well, if you want to secure one or all of those final 3 tickets, get in touch with us, 074-91-25,000, 074-91-25,000, and Bronwyn will give you the details there. Right, okay. I work in the disability services here in Donegal, says a listener. Why does everyone from the 6 counties seem to have a disability badge? It seems that no one in the car has a disability. I think, though, the one thing, if you do work in disability services here, you would understand that I know people who outwardly you wouldn't believe they have a disability, but you can have a chronic heart condition, COPD, and you might not actually look like you have a disability, but you have a disability and it restricts your movements and what have you. So not all disabilities are visual. I do get where you're coming from. But they question, is the criteria to get a disability badge in the north more relaxed than it is in the south? And that is a question I can't answer. Right, Ger Hyland is president of the Irish Road Hauliers Association, and he joins me on the show now. Good morning, Ger.
Good morning.
Right, you're accusing the Road Safety Authority of mismanagement of our driving test system. This shows that after Garda figures show 95% increase in the numbers of learner drivers caught driving unaccompanied in Donegal. What's your concerns here? I think they're pretty obvious.
Well, our concerns here that we feel as it stands now, the RSA have lost the confidence of the learner drivers, they've lost the confidence of the general public. Really and truly, our testing system and our testing regime here for drivers is just not fit for purpose. In Donegal alone, there's 21,422 learner permits. In the country, there's almost a million people driving with on learner permits. These people just cannot get driving tests. Mm. It's taken up to 6 months to get a driving test. There's 50% of our learner drivers failing their driving test on their first attempt. So that's feeding back into the pool again. We have learner drivers in places like Donegal, all over the country, but especially in places like Donegal, in country areas, they can't afford to stay in accommodation near the colleges. They've scrimped and saved to buy a car. They've scrimped and saved for insurance, same for driving lessons. Now they can't get a test. They're being forced onto the road without having a fully qualified driver beside them. I can't condemn them, for going out on the road. The same thing with apprentices on building sites, apprentice mechanics, whatever. How are these people expected to get to work in rural Ireland? The RSA are telling us they're hopeful that they will have 200 testers in place.
Yeah, but we've been hearing that for ages.
Like, that, you know, really and truly, you fail to plan, you plan to fail. It's an old adjective, but it's very true. Like, this didn't just happen overnight. The RSA or whoever in the department should have had sight on this. The number of learner drivers is increasing on a monthly basis. We have to do something about getting more driving testers into the scheme. But instead of that, we wait until the wolf is at the door. And now we're hopeful we're going to have 200 testers in August to contend with 1 million learner permits. Sure, it's a nonsense.
Currently, if you were to apply for your test in Letterkenny, you might expect to get a call in mid-November. I mean, that's remarkable, isn't it?
You know, and like, really and truly, somebody should be responsible for this. There has to be somebody responsible for this mess. Mm. But ultimately, it stops at the door of the RSA. They're the people that's handling the driving lessons. They're the people that's formulating the testing. They're the people that's responsible for the driving testers. So, at this stage, we need a root branch review with the RSA.
Well, that's been ongoing. Well, they're not talking of splitting the RSA into two bits. One bit sort of focusing on the promotion of road safety and a second bit then focusing on the type of stuff we're talking about.
Well, the laughable part of all this is that we've been calling for a long time for a root and branch review of the RSA, especially where the driving testing is. We're very short on drivers in the HGV sector in Ireland. So we can bring in an 18-year-old coming out of school. First of all, it takes him 6 months to get a car licence. Next, it takes him another 6 months to get a rigid truck licence. And another 6 months, if they're lucky, to get an Arctic licence. And that's provided they pass their three tests at the first time, every time. And, you know, by the time these people get to the setup where they can get their truck license, they're gone elsewhere. They're gone to the agriculture sector. They're gone to the building sites. I have a couple of young lads that I trained myself. I paid for their lessons. I paid for their driving test. I supplied them with a truck on the day of their driving test. One of them passed his test. He's now driving a truck for me. The other guy passed the car test. He passed the rigid test. He failed the Arctic test. He had friends going to Australia, and he says, I'm not going to hang around here for another 6 months waiting for a test. That chap's now in Australia.
You take
in Donegal, where you have young apprentices, and they're driving around on an L plate. Every penny they have is gone into buying a car, gone into insuring it, paying for driving lessons, and they cannot drive themselves to work. You know, really and truly, this just didn't happen today or yesterday. This is building for a long time, and nobody has.
But the bottom line is the last figures I saw, we've got 4 driving testers in this county. We've got 1 that works out of Donegal Town, 3 that works out in Letterkenny, none in Inishowen, which is covered by Letterkenny. So there's fundamentally your problem. That's why if you apply for your test today in Inishowen, 17th of November. Can you imagine? 17th of November, and that's when you could expect to be called. Now, if someone takes a week off sick, you're banjaxed. And in Letterkenny, it's the 11th of November. I mean, that's crazy in this day and age that you would have to wait so long, especially after doing all your tests all your lessons. Half your insurance would be gone if you managed to insure a car. We could never condone people going out driving uninsured, but given the makeup of our county and the desperation of our young people to start earning and having a bit of an independence and saving or whatever it might be, you know, it is forcing people, unfortunately, to feel that they've no choice but to break the law. And as you say, there's been a doubling, effectively a doubling of those caught driving unaccompanied. Yet the RSA does get a pass. I know you're calling them out today, Ger, but generally speaking, in this area, people don't seem to make the connection between these massive waiting times and the Road Safety Authority. They don't get that much heat.
Yeah, but like, you know, to think that the RSA are the people that devise the tests and the RSA are the people that's responsible then for the administration of it, like, that alone just needs to be split up. Sure, you can't have the fox minding the chicken coop all the time.
Okay, we'll see what the listeners think. Thanks very much, Ger. That's Ger Hyland, President of the Irish Road Hauliers Association. I don't need to ask, are any of you waiting or anyone in your home waiting for a driving test? Because I know myself, and it takes absolutely ages. Again, as I said before, there is a system whereby you can go through the website and check for cancellations, and they do come up. You have to spend so much time dedicated to it, but you can. But there's lots of people doing the same thing, so you really, it's fastest finger first. Okay, that's Ger Hyland. Do you agree? I'm sure you do. I can't imagine anyone disagreeing with the fact that we need more driving testers. And the commitment to more driving testers, we don't know where they're going to go, right? Because there's a commitment to more guards, and then you hear that they've hired, you know, 300 or 400 guards, and they're all going to Dublin. So even if the recruitment process is sped up, how many of them will actually come to Donegal, we simply don't know. But also to that story, I've done it a couple of times. I'm a little bit frustrated by it. It's a little bit like the improving the electric car charging infrastructure. They keep talking about doing it, but then it doesn't seemingly get done because we end up doing the same story again. 086 60 25,000, as I say, if you've got something you want to say about that. Hi Greg, I'm not one for writing or posting stuff on social media, but I wouldn't have a clue who to contact about this. I thought you might be able to mention it on your show. Me and my 7-year-old son went for a walk this morning and came across this at the road coming into Lisnanan towards Cashel Park. We absolutely discussed it and the smell was horrendous. Here's a video to show you. And Caroline, we determined what was it. Looked like a part of an animal, didn't it? Like a pig's head or something along those lines. I have seen the video. I was going to play it out, but it's a little bit... but I don't know how it came to be there or where it's from. It is absolutely disgusting. I would say, listener, to contact the council. I imagine they have a responsibility there, and maybe they might be able to go and remove it. But thanks very much for getting in touch with us. Hi, Greg. If only these anti-immigrant posters, protesters, applied their energy to support the defective block victims or the need for better hospital and health services, do these ever stop to think about the excellent care immigrant staff give in hospitals and care homes? Asks that listener there. There is Romas driving around Donegal in Ukrainian registered cars they bought from Ukraine. Surely that's wrong. As regards immigration, nothing wrong with good immigrants here to work, but quite a lot here are single Arabic men recently sitting, drinking coffee and walking around towns. Right, okay, we'll come back to that. Ben Harkin, author of Time Nor Tide, Ireland and the Climate Change, an analyst for an energy training company, joins us. Ben, thanks so much. Remarkable scenes in parts of France, Spain and Portugal where there's just been this mass power outage. The last I checked, there were sort of various varying opinions and views as to how this happened. Well, what do we know about it?
Yeah, it's unbelievable, Greg. You know, we don't see things like this too often. These are things you often hear of energy companies trying to prepare for, but you just don't know what's going to happen until it does. So essentially, Spain are saying that what's happened is there was a trip between their interconnector and France. Portugal and Spain have two different grid operators. Portugal are saying that it's a problem on Spain's grid. So electricity systems, all need to be maintained at roughly the same frequency. same voltage. What it looks like happened is that because of temperature differences across Spain, there was a voltage difference in their high voltage lines. That caused the frequency to get off kilter. When the frequency of the grid goes off, there's sort of a cascade effect. If it gets too low, then an interconnector might trip. That puts the frequency down further. Then a power station goes and another one goes, and this continues. So what we know happened is that in the space of about 5 seconds yesterday, Spain lost about 15 gigawatts of power generation. I looked there before I came on. Ireland's currently running at about 5 gigawatts. Right. So they essentially lost 3 Ireland's worth of generation in 5 seconds. And that's just what caused, I suppose, the complete collapse across the grid.
Running a grid is incredibly complex.
Mm-hmm. It is.
There's an awful lot of moving parts here. I mean, because we are sort of the end users and it's done successfully, it doesn't necessarily let us know how complex it is to keep a power grid up and running.
It is. It's extraordinarily difficult. So it is. And that's why, you know, we've often seen maybe governments across Europe say that they want more renewables in the grid. But grid operators will often try and slow that down. So, for example, Ireland currently has a max of 70% renewables. If we had more than that running, they just don't use it because they need to keep the grid stable. And it's the same in Spain. Spain was running at the time at around 70% renewables. That's something that they can handle very well. But that's, I suppose, very carefully managed to get to that stage.
What is the connection between the power in, you know, parts of France, Spain and Portugal? Do they generate power independently, or why are they interconnected as they are? Is it sharing excess or what?
Yeah, so across Europe, countries are connected. Ireland is very connected into the grid. We had a new interconnector open there 2 weeks ago. I suppose the Iberian Peninsula, Spain and Portugal is actually really more of an island. There's only very small connections between them. The idea is that, I suppose, if you have the likes of, say, Spain that has a lot of solar energy, that they can sort of help France when France needs it. France has a lot of nuclear energy. Maybe they can help Spain. And the aim of the EU, I think, is around sort of 15% interconnection by 2030. Spain's currently, I think, at around 6% or something. So they are relatively islanded. The only recent time we've had something like this is in Texas. I think that was 2020 or 2021. That was a weather event as well. That was an extreme snowstorm. The grid just collapsed. And that was the same Texas, really just an islanded grid completely of itself. And that was a reason why it failed as well.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we've most of us at some stage have plugged two things in at the same time at home, right? You know, maybe an air fryer and a vacuum cleaner, whatever it might be. And the trip is the switch yep. is tripped, so we know how sensitive that all can be. I can only imagine what it must be like to reboot a nation's power
yeah.
system.
Well, that's it. And the thing is, that's why it takes so long. It has to be done very carefully. You can't sort of just tell all the power plants to try and get back on. You have to do it bit by bit. So for every, you know, gigawatt of energy generation you get back on, you have to match the same amount of demand. So you have to sort of bring the country on slowly. That's why they have what's known as black start generators. So Spain has a lot of hydroelectric generators. So now, you know, they can still run, they get the grid up to the frequency that it needs to, and then you can start turning back on your gas plants, your coal plants, and then you can get the grid running. So thankfully, you know, they seem to be nearly 100% up and running again, which is remarkable. Like, it was around 11:30 yesterday that they lost, you know, a massive amount of power, and they're nearly back up and running. So it's incredible. It shows the preparation that goes into having these black start generators there. We do this in Ireland as well, so we are prepared for something like that.
There was early talk of it being a meteorological event.
Mm-hmm.
Has that been downplayed?
Yeah, well, that is what Portugal is saying, that essentially it was temperature differences across these here high voltage lines, temperature differences from one end of it to the other. Mm. That is something that has been warned about before. Spain and Portugal have been warned before about their grid. Their grid isn't stable enough. The investment wasn't put into it to keep it running properly. So, listen, that's going to be, I think, something's going to be looked at very heavily in the weeks ahead.
All right, brilliant, Ben. Listen, thanks so much for the insight. Really appreciate it. Ben Harkin there, author of Time Nor Tide, Ireland and the Climate Change, and an analyst for an energy trading company as well, with an insight as to what caused that massive power outage on that peninsula. Spain and Portugal, the power went out completely, and parts of France as well too. So thanks to Ben for that insight there. There is a demonstration protest taking place in Letterkenny this weekend, and I believe a counter-protest. I wouldn't mind having the exact phraseology of it anyway, but the protest is an anti-illegal immigration protest. I'll get the terminology in a moment. But Donegal County councillors have agreed a statement on this anti-immigration march, which is scheduled for Letterkenny this Saturday. Councillor Declan Meehan, independent, joins us on the programme now. I suppose before we get into the statement, would you recognise that, you know, a decent proportion of people in this county are frustrated? They're seeing their communities change dramatically, and there is a sense that maybe some areas are less safe than they used to be, and they're struggling to get houses, and they feel that other people are being accommodated ahead of them, and you know, this is feeding into a sentiment, I suppose, that might lead to a big crowd on Saturday. Do you understand or recognise people's concerns, Declan?
Good morning, Greg. Of course, I'm an opposition county councillor. I know exactly the issues that are out there. I know the failings of government policy, Greg, particularly around housing, health, education, special needs and disability, the whole spectrum of issues that are out there. I just think that the organisers of this demonstration on Saturday are scapegoating an immigrant and migrant community. And I think that we, when we have issues with government, need to punch up, not down. And we need to organise and protest what the actual issues are. And I think that it is a welcome distraction from some quarters if we start blaming migrants and immigrants for all the host of issues that we have in this country.
Yeah, but in a way, the way you phrase that almost is, it almost is being used to sort of discourage people from protesting. In other words, like, it's like there's a lot of people that might protest on Saturday, Declan, that their motivation is to send a message to government, you know, whereas you're almost presuming, I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that the motivation is actually directed towards those that are fleeing war or persecution or are economic migrants, as the government recognises some are.
No, let's not make assumptions and let's just talk about it, Greg. And I'll tell you exactly what my stance is on that march. That stance on that march has been organised by people who have no history of campaigning or marching for any of the issues that we are talking about. And they're targeting this issue deliberately and at specifically migrants and immigrants. And I'm saying that I believe, and there have been countless protests in this county and elsewhere in relation to defective blocks, housing, hospital services, and the people who are organising this march and people who are being bussed in for this march, I might add, from various quarters across this island, have no history of actually marching with people for the services that they need. And that's a really, really important point to make, Greg, because people do have concerns out there, and I have them too, around wait times in hospitals, around access to social housing, or an access to mental health supports. But I know exactly who's at fault here. It's a failing of government policy. It's not because we have migrants and immigrants in our community.
Yeah, but it's a human...
And the statement from Donegal County Council that we saw yesterday, myself with four other councillors, Micheál Cullen, Michael Aspic, Jimmy Brogan, Joy Beard and Thomas Sean Devine, shows that the opposition councillors, with the support of all parties, have called out this to say that Donegal is a place of welcome. It is no place for racism. And while I understand that people may have different motivations for marching on Saturday with that demonstration that's organised, and I do recognise them absolutely, and come and speak to us about them as your elected representatives, absolutely. And let's organise as we are doing to try and improve those services and address those issues.
Yeah, but
what I'm saying
but
is
people,
that march has been organised by people who have a history of criminality and violence.
Well, I don't know the ins and outs of that, and I don't know who's behind it. And there are multiple people behind it as well, so I don't know if you're referring to one, two, or three. But
borders.
I know, but I'm just... We can't throw out accusations like that there, and I distance myself from that.
Very easy to Google it.
Okay, well, we can. The thing is though, like I spoke to Louise yesterday. She's has mixed race children, as she described them herself. She says that if there's any sort of, you know, go home or any of that kind of crack, she's leaving straight away. But she does recognise the fact that even though she has mixed race children herself, that she's concerned at the amount of people that are being moved into certain areas, large groups of young men that can maybe there's no malintent. I'm sure there probably isn't, but can gather in certain parts of towns and make people feel uncomfortable. Maybe there's a cultural difference in how we, you know, how we interact with each other in one country versus this country. And that is the motivation for her, as an example. It's not to do with, you know, racism or anti anything or hate.
Yeah, and Lucas, what I would say to that is, you know, there was a comment that you read out just before you brought your last speaker on as well, that, you know, there are people hanging around drinking coffee and doing nothing. And like, I would question the motivation behind that being a concern. I really would. And I think that we have to also recognise that when asylum seekers come to this country, they're prohibited from working for 6 months at a minimum. And at the 6 months point, can they apply for a permit in which to do that? I think that people can have valid concerns, absolutely. My concern is that this march that has been organised on Saturday, much like the march that was organised in Dublin last weekend, will have unsavoury and unwelcome people as part of that. And that's not to say that the majority of people going there don't have valid concerns about government services and other issues. Absolutely, I recognise that. But in Dublin, we did see people marching alongside neo-Nazis, fascists, people from the far right, people who are holding up posters of Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, flying Israeli flags, who are promulgating a genocide in Palestine. And I think that that's what we need to recognise, that these marches are often coming from those quarters and not from genuine sources where people have genuine concerns. And there is a real concern around safety, real concern around safety at these demonstrations. And we saw those concerns come to reality in places like Dublin. So I think that's really important.
I do understand, and I saw some of the X accounts that were highlighting some of the negativity, the posters. In fact, in response to the UK Supreme Court ruling, you know, thousands of people took to the streets of London. They just wanted to demonstrate why they were opposed to that Supreme Court ruling. But you did then get far right, in inverted commas, X accounts taking pictures of kill all TERFs or something, you know. I don't believe that would be representative of everyone that attended that march in London. But the way we are now is, if you have a couple of rogue elements, it is highlighted and used to try and paint everybody with the same brush.
Yeah, and absolutely, that's, you know, that's not welcome. But I think people need to realise that that is the reality, that often the motive for organising these marches is very different to what they themselves, as potential attendees at a march, realise.
I suppose
online.
I think the speeches are often very telling at these events too. So we shall see.
Absolutely,
we shall see what the language and rhetoric is, because that might be more indicative than what is described at on a Facebook post.
Yeah, I think it's also just to use the opportunity, Greg, to come back to the statement that was issued by Donegal.
Yeah, and we'll finish that. I'll give you 2 minutes to reference that, if that's okay.
Yeah, thank you, because I think it is really important for your listeners to realise that there's not a lot that unites 37 councillors on Donegal County Council, as you can imagine, and you'll know that as a journalist, Greg. But we, myself and the other councillors had called for an emergency meeting, which was facilitated by the Cathaoirleach Niamh Kennedy, which we're grateful to her for. And there was unanimous support for that statement. And there was unanimous concern amongst people about the policing of it. So we've also sought a meeting with Ingarda Síochána about the policing on Saturday. We don't want anyone in County Donegal to feel unsafe. And we, as elected representatives, have to stand up for everyone in the county. And that's what we are doing. That's what we're trying to do. And that's why there's a counter-demonstration on Saturday organised by United Against Racism Donegal at 12 p.m. And we invite people to come out to that to show your support.
Of course, but is that not more inclined to cause aggravation by having a counter-protest?
Well, look, if everyone's intentions are peaceful, there should be no reason for that to happen. But also, I do believe that proper policing is of paramount importance at these events. And Garda Síochána need to take that threat seriously, because we have seen from information online that's been shared that people from various groups are being bussed into the streets of Letterkenny specifically for this march. And those people are coming from all sorts of unsavoury quarters across the island of Ireland. And that's what people need to know as well. They need to know.
And to be honest, even if it is not the motivation, I do feel for, you know, the 50-odd percent of staff down at Letterkenny University Hospital that aren't white, if I could put it as crudely as that.
And, 100%.
And those that are just working in coffee shops and what have you, second or third generation immigrants. And I just wonder how they might feel on Saturday. And I say that even if it's not the intention, I wonder how one might feel in terms of being welcome.
That's why it's so important, despite potential for aggravation, Greg, to host a counter demonstration to show that these people, as you're referencing there, are amazing staff in our hospital, our nursing homes, the work across all our industries that have been here for years or have only been here for 6 months, that they are welcome and that they are safe, and nobody should make them feel unwelcome. We're Donegal people. We're more intelligent. We're better than this. We know to punch up and criticize the government and not scapegoat migrant and immigrant communities.
All right, very finally, did you hear the comments from Deputy Pádraig McLoughlin and Senator Noel Blaney on this issue? I'm not sure they both recognise there were concerns and that there is a sense that, you know, Letterkenny is different and can feel unsafe.
Yeah, I'd be concerned about those comments, to be very honest, Greg, particularly from Senator Niall Blaney. I think that an awful lot of dog whistling language was used in that interview. And I think that it plays into these false narratives around disinformation about migrant and immigrant communities, not just in Letterkenny, but across the island of Ireland. And I think that we as political representatives and public representatives need to be better, need to lead rather than follow.
Okay, listen, thanks very much for your time. That was Councillor Declan Meehan.